Men's volleyball, women's volleyball, women's pole vaulting. Yeah, why are they always naked?
Do you have anything more than a pea brain behind those empty eyes? You think these women chose these outfits?
Yes, because they did. Beach volleyball uniform guidelines for the Olympic Games. Women's athletes' uniforms. They have an option of a t-shirt and shorts. They have an option of a tank top and shorts. They have an option of a one-piece bikini. And they have an option of long-sleeve shirts with leggings. Same applies for the uniform code of women's gymnastics. Section 2 under subcategory A, she may wear complete leg coverings of the same color as that of the leotard under or on top of the leotard. Same applies for the Olympic female runners, where they have all of these options. And literally every other sport.
So they have no choice. Wow, this was just a really dumb take.
They have the choice and they choose to be naked because they like the sexual attention. But your feminist brain went to, he must just hate women. That's why he's saying these opinions. Very juvenile and childish of you. That's so tough.
There you go. A brilliant little breakdown as to what's actually behind women wearing the skimpy outfits in the Olympics. You know, I could pontificate endlessly about the dichotomy of good and evil, but let's just watch this instead, shall we? 44.
fellow Americans, I'm back. The Nixon 28 collection is now available, and I must say, it looks tremendous. Go to the AliceJonesStore.com and pick yours up today. You'll be glad you did. Ultimate Power Drink Mix. The fantasy is real, and it's delicious. Visit the AlexJonesStore.com today.
All right, welcome back, folks. This is War Room Live, final hour, and I've got so many videos to show you this hour. I'm going to start with clip number 30 here. A lot of really great stuff has been happening on Capitol Hill the last couple of days. This is Kelly Armstrong grilling a judge on the Trump hush money case. And this is actually from a little while ago, but it's worth remembering who we're dealing with here. Again, as we talk about the left, whatever that term is, when you think about their lack of consistency when it comes to their belief, you know, being against rape culture, but in favor of turning the entire country Muslim, like there's a intense amount of inconsistency in their beliefs. But this also extends to the legal world and their unending hypocrisy when it comes to the enforcement of laws or the overreach of the government. They seem very, very concerned about the death of democracy only if it benefits them. Which again, if they were just consistent in their beliefs, we wouldn't even really have an issue. They'd have to choose one side or the other. It's this unmooredness, this arbitrariness with which they believe things that is so unbelievably frustrating. Again, if you care about the rule of law, if you care about the principle of the thing, you should have been against what they did to Donald Trump from the very beginning. People are still pushing the idea that Donald Trump is some sort of horrible criminal because the left wing decided to destroy the concept of law and order because they didn't want to lose another election to him. Let's watch.
Judge Wilson, what's the statute of limitations on a misdemeanor in New York?
1 year.
The business records case is a misdemeanor, correct?
The underlying crime, the falsifying business records, yes, that's a misdemeanor charge.
So the only way to get to a felony is by committing in concealment of another crime?
Correct.
And each one of those crimes has specific elements?
That's right.
And you have to prove, in order to get a conviction at trial, you have to prove every element of the crime beyond a reasonable doubt, right? That's just traditionally how this works.
That is the right way to do it.
So in the indictment, did they put the underlying crime?
No, they did not. They only described it as other crimes.
Okay. And in the jury instructions, did they put the specific underlying crime?
No, they... Falsifying business records was described in the jury instructions. There was some brief description of the New York State election law violation, but there was no description given of the choice of three crimes. There was a description given of falsifying business records, which was pretty ironic because it was falsifying business records to falsify business records.
So, and that's also a misdemeanor, right?
That should be, yeah.
So you have 2 + 2 = 6. Like, if you commit 2 misdemeanors, you get to the felony statute of limitations, which they had to get or they could have never brought the case.
That's correct. But there's some more question marks regarding the statute of limitations. It's not cut and dry because the time that Donald Trump spent out of New York could be used to toll the statute of limitations. That was the ruling in the Court of Appeals Harvey Weinstein case. He argued that the time that he spent out of California should not have told it, out of New York, that is, in California, should not have told the time limitations, but the Court of Appeals ruled against him on that issue. So that's, I think, how they get around the statute of limitations problem in this case.
So was the election law case a federal election law or state election law underlying crime?
It seemed like it was charged as both. When we got to the jury instructions, there's a violation of New York election law charged, but then there's one among the three charges underlying is an unspecified violation of federal election law.
And then the third one was tax violation, right?
Also unspecified.
So all three of those underlying crimes have significantly different elements of the crime.
That is correct.
Were any of the elements of those crimes listed?
No, not at all.
So, this is important, and it might not be as robust or anything, but when you defend a client in court, if you don't know what the elements of the crime you're defending, how do you mount a defense?
You can't. That's the very issue of fundamental fairness that I referenced. You, as a defendant, are entitled to know what the charges are against you so that you can defend against those charges. Donald Trump was never made aware of what the extent of the charges were against him until the end of the trial.
And those, and the elements of the crime go in the jury instructions. I mean, traditionally, that's how it works. Federal court, state court in North Dakota, state court in Minnesota. I've been in all of these different jurisdictions. You actually get the elements of the underlying crime, correct?
Any time that I instructed a jury, I instructed them what the elements of the crime were.
And instead, in this case, they got a grab bag.
They got a choice of three when it came to the underlying crimes, and we don't even know which ones they chose. So we don't know whether or not they could have been unanimous on those three or not. That's another failing of the jury instruction.
So not only did we have not the elements of the crime, but we had three different crimes with three vastly different elements of the crimes.
All unspecified.
None of them in the indictment. The elements of the crimes weren't in the bill of particulars. Last hearing, I had the bill of particulars waved at me like it was some kind of magic document that flew in here with its own cape.
So the statement of facts only describes a series of allegations, a series of actions that's believed that Donald Trump took. None of them describe any criminal activity. None of them describe any, they don't describe any elements of any crime.
And that's why you believe, as do I, that when this goes on appeal, there's going to be significant legal issues to argue that the jury never actually got them put in front of them.
I have very little doubt that this matter will be reversed on appeal and based upon these issues.
Because I've actually been pretty, I mean, I believe jury trials are still the best way to determine guilt and innocence. I just believe juries are only as good as the information put in front of them. So, and with that, I yield back.
Gentleman yields back. The gentleman.
So as we're watching that, and that was posted by Mila Joy, by the way. Mila Joy posted that. This proves Donald Trump had lawfare used against him. It's so simple, even a Democrat could understand it. I don't know if they would. I've got a new dichotomy to put out for you, a new theory to float for you. I think the actual dichotomy may be along the lines of something like reality versus unreality. I think that actually might be the deciding factor here. Because there's a sentiment that you see expressed consistently these days where people, it's almost like people think that they dictate reality. And there's a side that sort of is incapable of actually dealing with reality in any way. Like they're allergic to it. It's like when you put water on a hydrophobic plant, like it doesn't stick. They can't contend with it. They can't even see it. Because that's the reality. The reality is that Donald Trump was targeted in a lawfare campaign by a bunch of scumbags using their power and authority illegally to target him because of his politics. Principally, they should be against everybody, should be against everybody with a foot in reality, should be hugely against what happened to Donald Trump. They can't acknowledge that. It's not that it didn't happen, it's that they can't acknowledge it. And I think that I think this may be it. I'm not sure exactly how to define it. But that's a good example where, like, you can lay out to a leftist point by point the 100 ways that the trials against Donald Trump were fraudulent. And it doesn't matter to them. It's useful to them. So it's fine. You know, it's like they say that Donald Trump is a convicted racist, rapist. They say he's racist too. They say he's a convicted rapist. And the reason they say that is because a judge decided that E. Jean Carroll's defamation case can go forward on the basis of her having been raped. He just declared it. There was no trial. There was no evidence presented. There was no defense, no prosecution. It was just by fiat, the judge declared Donald Trump is a rapist. So now you ask a leftist, they genuinely believe Donald Trump is a racist. Why? Not because reality showed that he was a racist, because some guy said it. He gets to dictate reality, and that becomes reality. Do you know what I mean? Do you understand where I'm coming from? I've got another video that hopefully will highlight this. Clip number 20 here. This is Kissin talking to, I'm blanking on his name right now. I think it's for some reason the name Aleister Crowley is jumping to my mind. It's something similar to that. I'll find his name here in just a second. But Kissin, you know, from his podcast Triggered or whatever it's called, Retriggered. I can never remember. But this clip's good. Let's watch.
We see it in policing, not only in the way the policing is being practiced, but in the instructions police officers get. They're explicitly told not to treat people equally. Explicitly.
Oh, honestly, this stuff is just, it's dementing. It's absolutely amazing.
That's the quotes from the police own instructions.
And it may be because you found one document where some guy who's writing some guidance for police. The idea...
It's the College of Police Guidance.
Okay, wait a minute.
This is how police officers are trained.
Okay.
Why are you saying okay like I'm saying I'm making something up?
Because I think... I'm not saying you're making up.
Have you looked into this?
Not as deeply as you.
Well, I think you should.
Well, maybe I should, but I...
Because then you wouldn't dismiss the factual things I'm saying out of hand.
Let me dismiss it in my own way.
Go ahead.
Right, okay. He's going to hog the microphone again.
I am. This is outrageous to me. You haven't looked into this.
Well, because... No, I'm aware of the issue.
And so
I'm
why aware are you dismissing it?
Because I think... Two things. First of all...
That's what people mean when they say woke. It's not a catch-all phrase. They mean two-tier treatment.
It is a catch-all phrase. No, they don't. They call you woke if you sort of campaign for gay rights.
Not at all.
Yes, they do.
There's loads of gay people who use this phrase woke.
Okay, they may do.
If you're wondering why the left seems so deluded, it's because they literally do not see the problems in our country. Aleister Campbell, that's the guy's name, here openly admitting he doesn't think two-tier policing is real despite the evidence. Do you understand? It is real. It's not up to him. Like, I don't know. Just the way that was phrased was a little bit off to me. They just are refusing to acknowledge reality. That's all it is. And like that response was so typical of conversations I've tried to have. I mean, I'm like having like flashbacks when I hear that. Where it's just like, well, have you looked into it? Well, no, but, you know, I still don't believe you. It's like, but it's reality. But this is really what's happening. And you can see it yourself if you just look for it. But here's me telling you with the proof, here's what's happening. Here's what reality is. And they just can't see it. They can't contend with it. It's like the quote we had the other day where it was, you know, the vaccine truther stuff. If, you know, you have to understand, the doctors are in on it, the media's in on it. Yeah, they're all in on it. And that's an overwhelming and, you know, hugely daunting thing to consider, but that's reality. You got to contend with it. But that's it, really. That was a crazy clip. Aleister Campbell just refusing to believe what he's saying. And you know he's refusing to believe it because he understands how bad it is. Do you know what I mean? Like, two-tier policing, if that's real, it's a big issue. And it means there's a lot of other stuff going on. Like, you don't get to two-tier policing. You don't get to the police official training manual saying to treat black people better than white people. Like, that's a real problem for people who are egalitarian, people who, you know, believe in the liberal system. So they just don't want to think about it. I don't get it. I really don't. Because they do not have that same reticence when it comes to believing lies. Remember I said that earlier this week, that like the left only cares about accusations if they're fake. That like if somebody comes out and is like, hey, you know, this candidate used to make hardcore pornography, they'd be like, well, shut up. That's their right to do that. And what's wrong with you? Why would you want to bring that up all of a sudden? But if you want to accuse Graham Plattner of raping his girlfriend 5 years ago, then they're outraged and they want him kicked out of the race. It's like they only care about things that are fake. They only care about racism when it's white racism against brown people that does not exist in the modern Western world. But they let themselves feel, you know, anger and outrage and fury at the concept because it's not real. The actual racism that's going on, that they should be against if they had any principles, they refuse to even acknowledge it's real. This is really it. And this is why everybody feels insane, because half of our country is literally insane. And that's the only way I can even phrase it. Because, man, I mean, how do you get here? How do you get to a place where half the country is screaming endlessly about white privilege while white people are the only group that's discriminated against explicitly and to an enormous degree? How do you get to a situation where women are the majority college graduates and holders of middle class jobs, and yet you're still being told endlessly that you need more benefits to women explicitly to help them get ahead? They're more ahead than the boys are. Why is it still going on? I almost like imagining a world where the left is consistent, because, you know, there are examples like yesterday there was a post where it was a show in South Africa, Big Brother, some reality show in South Africa, and all the contestants were white. And it was somebody responding going, well, white people are a huge minority in South Africa, so actually this is the most diverse show of all time. You know, actually only 8% of South Africa is white, so this is the most diverse, quote unquote, the most, you know, focusing on minorities project that South Africa's ever had. Like, how funny would it be if left-wingers were consistent in their support for minorities and they were just as, like, outraged and furious when, like, South Africa had black people star in their movies? How funny would that be? Like, they out of one side of their mouth, they're like, oh, so you're casting this movie with white people? What the hell's wrong with you? And then they go to South Africa and they're like, you're casting this with black people? How dare you? White people are the minority. They deserve representation. How is a little white child supposed to grow up believing in himself when all he sees are black heroes on TV? Doesn't he deserve some representation as well? It would actually be funny. But you understand that would never happen, right? It's an absurd thing to suggest that leftists actually care about quote unquote minorities. They don't. They never did. They hate white people. But you can just imagine if they were principled and actually believed this stuff, you would have the feminists, the whoever out there, they would all be now clamoring for male representation because men are deliberately discriminated against and excluded from positions of authority in our society. Where's the outrage for it? Even suggesting it, everybody listening to my voice knows how absurd it would be to suggest that far left, you know, minority rights activists would ever advocate for white people, no matter how much of an abused, oppressed minority they are. White people will never have the sympathy of the left, ever, which tells you what it's really about and tells you the word, the phrases, the talking points about minority support. It's absurd. The whole thing's absurd. Let's go to clip 17 here. This is Representative Brandon Gill receiving official testimony that white men are heavily discriminated against in college admissions. Let's watch.
Under DEI regimes, what races do colleges and universities typically least prefer in their admissions processes?
White, men, Asians. Men is not a race, obviously. But there actually might be a little bit of reverse discrimination actually going against women now because women so predominate on universities. But yes, whites and Asians primarily.
Why do you think that it's primarily those groups?
Because they're in a war with the reality of these disparities. So if you want to have a quota that comes out perfectly racially balanced at the end, the only way that these universities have been able to achieve that is by discriminating on the basis of race and sex in their admissions.
They're at war with reality. Yep, that's it. And again, I'm getting flashbacks to my debate with Destiny, which wasn't even really a debate. So I was just telling him things. He just was not believing me. And it's like, you don't have a choice to believe this or not, dude. This is just what's happening. Yeah, this is it. And I've got so many examples of this. Like this, for example. Little House on the Prairie showrunner. They're remaking Little House on the Prairie so they can destroy it. Rebecca Sonnenschein on why she rebuilt the Frontier Classic around a new lens. Quote, I think a lot of our pop culture portrays the West as men riding around with guns, solving problems with violence and posturing, but that's just not how it was settled. We are really trying to do a show that does not fall back on tropes of sort of masculinity. Let me read that. Pop culture portrays the West as men riding around with guns and solving problems with violence. Yeah, that's exactly how it happened. Do you understand? Do you get where I'm coming from? The allergy to reality these people have? These are the people that will simultaneously tell you that the people that settled America were genocidal white supremacists, but that they somehow settled the West without violence? The women did it for them? What are you talking about? It's so inconsistent. It's just like endless madness from these people. No, the reality is white dude with guns fought their way to ownership of this country, and that is a good and glorious thing that they achieved. And nobody needs a new Little House on the Prairie. Folks, go back and watch the old house on Little House on the Prairie. It's available online. It's an amazing show, and it absolutely, you know, is better than any show on TV today.
My fellow patriots, the first thing the globalists and the leftists do when they want to silence you is go after your merchant accounts, go after your business payment systems. It's that simple. They try to cut off your ability to even receive money or make payments. It's globalist siege. It's globalist economic warfare. It's a globalist blockade, an embargo, sanctions against American populist patriots. For everyone that's been watching and listening to me for years, you've seen the attacks. You've seen the deplatforming. You've seen the court battles, the news articles, the demonization, the bogus default judgments. We even have FBI and CIA operatives on hidden camera talking about how their entire goal was to take me out at the knees by knocking out my ability to accept payments. And that model they used on me, they admit, is for all of you.
Alex Jones.
Yeah, so we were after him.
So with Alex Jones, and the goal with him was what, just to bankrupt him?
Pretty much.
Well, because of First United Payments and your support, they failed. And they failed because I had a processor with a backbone who loves America and believes in the free market. One who stands up for American justice and who didn't back down when they received threatening messages and pressure from other major institutions. If you are a conservative business owner, Google is watching you. Meta, Facebook is watching you. Amazon, all of the major big tech is watching you. If you think for one second that they are not orchestrating and coordinating their efforts behind the scenes to take you offline and out of business and render you harmless to the system and the machine, you are wrong. The question is not if, it's when Stripe, Shopify, PayPal, Square, they're all part of the same big tech machine. Consolidation, vertical integration, that is the goal of the BlackRock globalist system. Because once there's only one central system, they can bring in the universal credit score. This is the key to their entire panopticonic takeover plan in their own words. The head of BlackRock, Larry Fink, was very clear. Once they have the system in place and they're close, they are going to shut down everybody that isn't part of their system. Even people that aren't political. This is about total control. They've just got to get to the patriots that are opposing them to get to you. And FirstUnitedPayments.com stands directly in the tyrant's way. My fellow Americans, this is your call to action. Call or email First United Payments now and ask them how you can protect your business against the globalist predatory attacks and shutdowns today. Visit First United Payments now at FirstUnitedPayments.com. And talk to a real human here in the good old U.S. of A by calling toll-free 877-899-1313. That's 877-899-1313. The tyrants are counting on us not to innovate. They're counting on us not to migrate to institutions and organizations that are pro-human just like us. This isn't some new company. I've been using them for almost a decade. They're already taking care of most of the patriots. Whether you're a florist, have a gas station, or you're a farmer, or you've got a little five and dime shop or a factory, whatever it is, online merchants, this is the place for you. These guys are patriots and they're in our corner. They're Americans just like us and they hate the New World Order with a passion. They believe in the free market and they understand this is 1776 2.0. 90% of it is information warfare and financial. And this is just as important as the right to self-defense and guns. You've got to be able to have your own business. You've got to be able to operate without these globalist sharks, this mafia shutting you down. And First United Payments is the tip of the spear. Proven warriors, ladies and gentlemen, in this fight. Thank you so much. Now visit FirstUnitedPayments.com right now.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
Remember, folks, tonight at 7:30, Alex Jones will be live covering the big primetime speech by President Donald Trump, reportedly about voter fraud. Sorry, what was I talking about? Look, folks, we celebrate life. We celebrate beauty. We love humanity. And, this really is moderation is the virtue. It always is. And we're constantly being forced into these dichotomies. We are the third way. We represent that third way. Somewhere in the middle between put your women in hijabs and every college girl with an OnlyFans, somewhere in the comfortable middle is Americana. Is getting milkshakes with your sweetheart ahead of the sock hop. It's moral and good and beautiful and lovely and fun. But for some reason, we can never maintain that. We are always, forever being pulled in one direction or another. Maybe this would be a good time to go to clip 22. We don't even need to, though, but it's the same with everything. Clip 22, I guess we can go ahead and play. Let's go ahead and play clip 22, because this is what we reject here in America. This is what we should have nothing to do with. This is the reason we should have nothing to do with it. Here's a conversation between an Israeli and a Muslim. Let's watch.
Me, Hamas.
What do you
I
think?
Love you, Hamas.
What do you think about the Jewish people?
Hamas killed a baby, Israel.
What do you think
no
about
problem.
That?
No problem. No problem.
You support the killing of babies?
Me killed baby, Israel.
You support that? You support the killing of Israelis, of babies?
Baby, mama, a.k.a.
Ah,
me, Sikim, baby, mama.
That's what you want to do?
Number one, kill mama, baby, but then mama. Ooh, but then.
And then people ask, Chris, Hamas supporters, see, want to kill Israeli babies, Israeli women.
Yes, Hamas.
You see it yourself.
Number one.
You see it yourself.
Muslim
people praise killing of Jewish people, of Israelis, of women and kids in particular.
Yes.
What do you say about that? He has no remorse.
Yes, live TikTok.
No.
Baby Israel. Yes.
No shame whatsoever.
Yes.
I thought Islam was the religion of peace.
No.
No? I understand now. I see it now. You just expose yourself.
You
the truth is finally coming out. Islam ain't no religion of no peace or nothing.
Yeah, you're both just awful. No, you're both awful. I mean, I could show you 100 videos in exactly the same direction, right? Exactly the same, but inverted direction. I could show you video after video of Jewish people saying exactly the same thing about the Muslim people. And it's like, do we have to choose between these? So the Israelis think every Palestinian should be murdered. And the reaction from the Palestinians is just like, oh my gosh, these people are so evil. And it's like, well, what do you think about the Israelis? Oh, we should kill their children. And it's like, and then the Israelis are the ones going, oh, do you see how bad these people are? It's just like, no, you're both awful. You're both awful. The correct answer is the middle ground, which is let's not kill any babies. Nobody's babies need to be killed. It's not helping anybody, okay? You're the bad guy as soon as you do that. So you're both the bad guys because you both do that on an endless basis. You suck. We are the adults in the room. We are the Christians. We are the moderates in all of this. We, America, should step in, should put a stop to both of you since we're stronger than both of you. But this is the problem. This is it's emblematic or representative of everything else that we deal with. Is this really the choice we're being forced to make? You got to be with the Jewish child killers or the Muslim child killers. Make your pick. No. How about no? You have to be a free market, small government capitalist or a full-blown card-carrying communist. How about no? How about there's a middle ground? In all of this, you have to be wearing a hijab or you have to be doing OnlyFans. How about the middle ground? How about we stop being forced into this false dichotomy, all of these false dichotomies over and over again? And again, there's this real sickness and madness going on when in the same society you have new women's athletic guideline crackdown on sexualizing camera angles, while at the same time, 3/4 of kids aged 12 to 13 have viewed hardcore pornography, usually on a regular basis. You know what I mean? Like, do you understand that it's not like we're too lascivious or we're too controlling? So no, we're too much of both. Somehow we are too much of both. Somehow we live in the most sexualized society that's ever existed, and yet young people are having less sex than they've ever had before. Like, this is bad. This is wrong. We used to have a society that was prim and proper and reasonable and respectable. But, you know, the kids got up to some, you know, no good on Friday nights. They got to go out and have some innocent fun and, you know, sow their wild oats and everything was fine. Now it's like OnlyFans or incels. It's like, this is so wrong. This is so messed up. And it's, and in a way we've lost, like, in a way, I think part of what has degraded all of this is the idea that it's somehow dishonest to, like, be shamed about some of this. Like, I'm trying to figure out how to say this. But there's this idea that if you try to model and try to express higher values, that you're a liar if you don't live up to those values, or, you know, things like sex before marriage. Does everybody wait to have sex until they're married? Obviously not. But when you raise your kids, you encourage them and tell them and implore them that it's the right thing to do to wait till marriage. Bad people look at that and go, you're a hypocrite. You should just admit that sex is fun and good and tell kids that it's wonderful. It's like, no. It's a good thing, actually, to be a little bit hypocritical about these things. I believe that. I think it's good to say, here's the moral that we uphold, and it's okay if we fall short of that sometimes. That's all right. What we don't do is throw the moral out just because you fall short of it sometimes. And that's what the reaction of the left often is like, well, you know, you look at porn sometimes, so I guess it should be absolutely everywhere with no restrictions. It's like, no. You're supposed to be shamed about some of this stuff. It's supposed to be done in secret. It's okay if it happens, but it's supposed to be secret and you're supposed to keep it hidden and you're supposed to, you know, not admit it. That doesn't make you a bad person. People have been tricked into thinking it makes them a bad person. Do you understand? Does that make sense? Because again, you extremism on any level is just not good. And you know, you look at a place like Utah, which is majority Mormon, and the Mormons, as far as I know, have some of the strictest, you know, societal codes when it comes to premarital sex or, you know, pornography or anything like that. And yet Utah is like the number one state. You know, they'll show pictures, you know, maps of the United States. And then in each state is like the number one word searched on pornography sites. And it's like Utah has more gay porn consumption than any other state. And I think that's what happens typically. Like when you try to ruthlessly suppress all expression of human emotion, it starts expressing itself in unhealthy ways. You need to understand and give license to some expression of, you know, youthful hormonal, excitement, because you can't suppress that completely. If you try to, things get weird. Why are Catholic priests, why do they have a much higher percentage of gays and pedophiles in Catholic priesthood? Probably because they don't let their priests get married. That's not natural. That's not normal. You're not supposed to suppress the human sexual instinct like that. If you're called to it, if you're the type of person who can make that type of commitment, then okay, you can be a bishop, but to expect every single low-level priest to be celibate, you're asking for those natural impulses to be expressed in unnatural ways. It's very, I don't know. I feel like we have to explain. This is like a very American idea of moderation, which really is what liberty is all about, right? The whole idea is, again, take the example of, you know, teenagers fooling around, right? Like that's not about, you want your kids to get some life experience in high school. You want them to have relationships. You want them to have breakups, and it's sad, sucks, but you know, you got to go through it. You got to learn some lessons. This is a part of being a human being. This is a part of growing up. These things are all good. If you have a teenage kid and you try to stop them from ever interacting with the opposite sex, like they're going to go crazy. Like it's not going to go well. It's not going to turn out well. at the same time, you don't tell your teenage kid, like, yeah, it doesn't matter. Just go out and do whatever you want and, you know, just seek physical pleasure wherever you can find it. Ignore the consequences. Like, you never tell them that either. You tell them the right thing to do, and then, you know, you leave it up to them whether they want to follow that or not. You give them liberty. You give them liberty, and if they make the wrong choice, it's not going to go well. But you don't force it on them one way or the other. This is all part and parcel with the same underlying foundational mindset of, like, being an American. We don't want the government to have to control every aspect of our life. We need a little bit of freedom to be human beings. At the same time, you let that go too far and look at the situation we're in now. Everything's messed up. Everything's screwy because people decided that, you know, having morals and you know, ideals that you live up to makes you a hypocrite if you don't live up to them. Doesn't make you a hypocrite. But stuff like this. Gen Z's search for fulfillment, less sex and more porn, and a deep desire for friendship. Contrary to the over-sexualized depiction of teenagers in shows like Euphoria and Riverdale, Generation Z, born between 97 and 2012, is tired of seeing sex on screen. According to Teens and Screens 2023, a recent report from UCLA, nearly half of Gen Z respondents say that showing sex is not necessary to the plot of a movie or TV show. Many of them also believed romance is overused in media. What do these young people want to see on screen instead? Friendship. And, you know, this might be one of the most telling things because, you know, there's a great passage from C.S. Lewis about friendship and about sort of the sickness in people who feel the need to inject sexualization into every friendship. And it's a common thing you see with Lord of the Rings, how Lord of the Rings is a story of community and partnership and friendship, like real friendship, you know, real dedication on a purely, you know, platonic level. And yet, you know, you have gay people being like, oh, this would have been so much better if Sam and Frodo were sticking each other's butts. That's what really is the highest expression of togetherness. Yeah. It's all love or sex these days. Friendship is almost as quaint and outdated a notion as chastity. Soon friends will be like the elves and the pixies, fabulous mythical creatures from a distant past. Well, that's a pretty good quote. It's not the one I was thinking of. But yeah, that's a great one. I mean, there's no shortage of great C.S. Lewis quotes. But there you go. Oh, now Lord of the Rings is a great film. You know, that's what it was missing. And this goes down to, like, I don't know. It's just a weird, perverted, demented kind of way to view the world. Because, again, in reality, everybody should recognize that the closest relationships that we as human beings experience are, like, by definition, totally asexual. Everybody knows this. The people you're closest to are your siblings and your parents and your family, right? I mean, typically, that's who you're going to have the closest relationships with. Do you think it'd be closer if sex was involved? Obviously not. So, you know, what is this mindset that seems to simultaneously put this incredible value on sex as if it's the thing that defines intimacy alone, like you can't be intimate without it, and yet is, like, terrified of sex and is driving it out of everywhere. It's just a sickness. It's a sick dichotomy. The data is especially interesting in light of another social trend. The number of teenagers having sex has gone down in recent years, whereas the majority of teens in the 90s had lost their virginity by the time they graduated high school. That is not the case today. Fewer than 40% of today's high schoolers have ever had sex. Does that mean Gen Z is charting a different course than previous generations and seeking authentic friendships rather than sexual relationships during their youth? No. No. I don't think I need to tell you. Actually, I think the amount of friends you have is probably very positively correlated to the amount of sex you have, actually. Because what this actually is a reading of the level of personal intimacy between individuals. And that is what's going down. That's what's collapsing. sex is an expression of that, but it's not the ultimate. But it's letting you know that the amount of human connection that young people are receiving is like cratering and practically non-existent, which is why they're creating AI companions. There's an article about that recently about how, I believe it's now, it's like more Gen Z have like digital girlfriends or boyfriends than actual boyfriends and girlfriends. Like, do you understand this is a massive, this is a societal sickness that we're suffering through? Now, which is a little weird because I'm like a Christian right winger. I think there's too much lasciviousness, but this is kind of the weird balancing act that we have to try to carry out now. Like, I'm a libertarian. I don't want the government involved in my life. I actually don't want it any bigger than it is. However, I recognize that it's needed to do certain things to get us back on track. I don't think that we should be raising kids to want to be having sex as young as possible. Like, it's not a healthy impulse. However, I want our kids growing up feeling close to one another, having friends, having fun, making mistakes, not being terrified to go outside or scared to drive a car like so many kids these days are. This is unhealthy. This is bad. So, like, we've got to find some sort of middle ground here, because in a weird way, the left are the puritanical ones now. But they only like human expression of sexuality when it's in its most degraded and unproductive forms. Before discussing the issues that Gen Z faces on this front, it's important to underscore the myriad benefits of teenagers being largely abstinent. Having sex at a young age can cause negative effects on mental health, especially for girls. Studies show casual sex can worsen self-esteem, increase rates of suicidal ideation, and create physical and mood-related problems which ripple into adulthood. The population that experiences most dramatic difficulties from sex are girls under the age of 16. This group faces increased rates of depression or anxiety after they become sexually active, which makes sense given the hormonal differences in the way that men and women react to sex. Women experience intense emotional bonding after sexual experiences, which means they later break up with their partners or are ignored by him at school the next day. As in the case with teens, they often feel emotionally vulnerable and anxious. Adult women experience these effects too, but for the teenage brain that's still developing, the effects are more profound. So again, I agree with that. From a physical and mental health standpoint, it is advantageous for young people to wait to have sex. And I agree with that. However, it's not a good thing that teenagers these days are having less sex. And again, there's just something very bizarre about the fact that kids in the 1950s were having more sex than kids these days. Something very wrong about that. Something very wrong about a time period when, like, all the kids would gather together to find the old, you know, soggy page of Playboy they found in the woods, try to see some skin. Meanwhile, they're having more sex than the kids now that are accessing hardcore pornography for hours every day. So everything has gone horribly wrong, I think, is the final point I'm making here. Everything has gone horribly wrong, and it's because we're being run by people who are emotionally and spiritually allergic to reality and contending with reality and actually noticing the effects of the policies that they pursue and then changing the policies in accordance to the effects that they have. That just can't happen for some reason. But I got some more videos to show you here before we close out. Let's go to clip 25 here, because while we haven't covered it as much in the last few days, the battle over the data centers is continuing and indeed increasing. And we cannot forget that while all this other stuff is going on, they are building the digital infrastructure for the global panopticon, along with Flock and other surveillance methods, which, again, you know, again, let me just, on top of everything else, just remember that the Democrats don't want you to provide an ID for voting, but do want you to have a digital ID to drive your car or access the internet. Because once again, I remind you, they have no principles, they have no morals, they aren't human. Let's go to the video.
On average, a single data center uses a 500 million gallons of water a day for cooling, according to industry reports. Some of that wastewater could be discharged into Ohio's lakes and streams under a permitting process under review by the Ohio EPA. Environmental groups have concerns about the impact to water quality in rural communities.
It's like a small city, the discharge that will come out of these. And that will, you know, if they don't have a sewage treatment plant, that will go into the streams or the river or another body of water.
Under the Ohio EPA's proposal, data centers that qualify for the water discharge would get a 5-year permit to release water used to cool down tech components.
This is very real. The EPA is proposing those permits to let data centers dump all that water into the lakes and streams. The Ohio EPA proposed a general permit, this one right here, to streamline the approvals for data center discharges of wastewater and stormwater. This covers a couple different kinds of water. It would allow direct discharge into rivers, streams, or Lake Erie under certain conditions. Permits would be for 5 years. So the EPA is reviewing everything. The agency says it's maintaining water quality protections, but it is necessary for economic growth. Data centers bring jobs and tax revenue. So they're willing to let these concerns kind of go off to the side because of the potential jobs and tax revenue, which we know that there's not really that many jobs that come with these things. It's really just a scam. So the concerns being raised are thermal pollution. The hot water can harm aquatic life. Chemicals, there are real chemicals and metals that data center pollution causes. Volume, just the amount of water and discharges, especially during droughts, so the amount of water they're taking out, the amount of water they're pushing back in. Environmental groups, like the Great Lakes groups, warn of risks for the drinking water, recreation, and ecosystems. So there are real risks here, and you are not going to get a lot of return for these risks, but they're going to plow ahead anyway.
Just, you know, another fabricated problem that solving a non-existent problem, our lack of data. We'll die if we don't have all of these data centers. How will we survive if we aren't providing internet service to literally the entire world? We got some major problems here, folks, and it really is just amazing that InfoWars, Alex Jones, like we just seem to be the only ones who can actually figure this out. So, you know, I always think back, like people love putting different labels on us, and people get confused because we're very strongly and outspokenly Christian while at the same time not portraying ourselves as pastors better than anybody else, which is one of the things I've always, you know, appreciated about Alex Jones. He's like, you know, it's like I like sexy women and fast cars, but I'm also a good God-fearing man that will, you know, go to my death rather than tell a lie. And it's like, Can we not have that? Is that not the middle ground that we should all be striving for? Can we not be human beings and express our humanity while not, you know, giving in to the most destructive tendencies of our race? I think we can do it. I believe in us. Support us at thealexjonesstore.com, and we'll be back tomorrow. We'll see you then, folks.
My fellow patriots, the first thing the globalists and the leftists do when they want to silence you is go after your merchant accounts. Go after your business payment systems. It's that simple. They try to cut off your ability to even receive money or make payments. If you are a conservative business owner, Google is watching you. Meta, Facebook is watching you. Amazon, all of the major big tech is watching you. If you think for one second that they are not orchestrating and coordinating their efforts behind the scenes to take you offline and out of business and render you harmless to the system and the machine, you are wrong. The question is not if, it's when Stripe, Shopify, PayPal, Square, they're all part of the same big tech machine. Because once there's only one central system, they can bring in the universal credit score. The head of BlackRock, Larry Fink, has been very clear. Once they have the system in place and they're close, they are going to shut down everybody that isn't part of their system, even people that aren't political. This is about total control. They've just got to get to the patriots that are opposing them to get to you. And FirstUnitedPayments.com stands directly in the tyrant's way. My fellow Americans, this is your call to action. Call or email First United Payments now and ask them how you can protect your business against the globalist predatory attacks and shutdowns today. And talk to a real human here in the good old U.S. of A. by calling toll-free 877-899-1313. You've got to be able to have your own business. You've got to be able to operate without these globalist sharks, this mafia shutting you down. And First United Payments is the tip of the spear. Proven warriors, ladies and gentlemen, in this fight. Online merchants, this is the place for you. Now visit FirstUnitedPayments.com right now.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.